Oh, yeah. There is a show to do. I was thinking some serious dancing was in order. That was Monty Alexander, Jamaica's Monty Alexander, with Bob Marley's Running Away. As you know, Monty Alexander, many of you may know, is so versatile. He's on the piano, but he plays just about everything. Classical music, reggae, inspired music, jazz, blues, he plays everything. And he plays everything magnificently. So that was Bob Marley's Running Away, and this is from Alexander's 1999 album, Stir It Up, which is yet another reference to a Bob Marley tune. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we've got a lot of feedback yesterday, more than we could have accommodated on the air in the time allotted. So we do what we do, which is extend the time to this program today, so that you, if you had called in and could not get in, this is your chance to do so. I don't like it when people can't have their say. It's very important. And especially in times like these, it's so important that people have a place, they have some space to express themselves. It is not important whether people agree or disagree with you. It is important that you have room to express yourself publicly. And maybe it will be your point of view that will turn somebody's head around, change somebody's mind. You never know. But you're doing a good job of making the presentation and us doing our good job of listening intently, the combination, you just can't beat it. So with those few remarks, I open up today's program to follow up on yesterday's program, when we asked the question, what is it in this time? What is happening in your view at this time that significantly has altered your view of the world, your worldview? What concerns you most at this time? And why does it concern you? Whatever it is you say concerns you most, why does it concern you? Well, you know the number, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And we don't want to repeat yesterday's calamity, where so many people wanted to get on but couldn't. So it calls for you to move in a timely fashion and take advantage of the opportunity to share what you're thinking at this time in all of our lives. Very seldom does a country reach a point where just about everybody is on the same page, very much concerned about one thing or another. But it looks like we're getting there, or in many ways already are there, in which people are concerned. And what are they concerned about? Why the concern? That is where we are going to go. And I would really like it if you could make an extra effort to be as specific as possible, so we don't have to guess at what you say. And we start off with Benji from New York. Hello, Benji. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice. Two concerns I have are the mandates. The mandates is what opened me up. That really changed my whole politics. So the mandates is what I'm very, very upset about, and also the lack of community. And what I mean by lack of community, I don't know if it's a good example, but I went to the Washington demonstration, and I was sitting next to a lady. She happened to be an African American woman, but she was hostile to me from the beginning. And then finally, at the end of the trip, I can't use the expletive. She said, "You know your SH," you know, says, "You know your stuff, but you're full of this." And, you know, she used a lot of profanity. And I thought that was, I really just wanted to have a, you know, let's have a dialogue. I think that, you know, and there was a lack of spirit. You know, I would have liked to see, one person gave me his phone number, Henry from Massachusetts. So I think I'm concerned about the lack of community, the lack of respect. I didn't use any profanity towards her. You know, I let her say what she has to say, and I didn't make myself to be self-righteous. I've said here on the program that I believe sometimes the ends justify the means, and I don't consider myself a purist politically, but I use this as an example of where I wish to see that the time when people can voice their opinion, can disagree, but respect the humanity of being a human being.
Yes, but aren't you taking that one situation a little too far? You may just have run into this woman has probably been waiting for a long time for somebody that she can yell at.
Yeah, well, I let her, but you see, I let her say what she had to say, and I didn't respond. In kind, you know. So I demonstrated the spirit of community.
Good for you. The main thing is, you walked into a situation. You didn't cause anything to happen, and these days, because of all these pressures that people are dealing with, that they have no place to put, no way to solve, they combust extemporaneously. They just combust. You just happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, next to the wrong lady. And just chalk it up to the fact that you had good control of yourself. Nobody had to come and bail you out of jail. And you're all right. You're okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but the first part was with the mandates, and I don't know if you want to expound on it, if you want to move on to another call, it's up to you. But the mandates really scare me. Even though I did end up taking the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, I did feel a lot of pressure to take it. I didn't have any side effects from it, but I don't like. To me, it's very. I'm glad I went. I went to this rally. I went to the Albany rally. Hope to go to other rallies. So I'm glad. I'm glad I showed up. And I thank you and your program and for all the years that you've been giving yourself over to the public.
Well, I thank you for calling. And what's more is, I thank you for your self control. you didn't lose it. That's great.
Well, no, I didn't lose it.
Hold on to it.
Okay, yes. Thank you. Thank you, Chief.
Gino from the Bronx, you're on the air. What are you particularly concerned about in this time, and why?
Everything. But to be specific, good day, Utrees.
Hello, Gino.
Out there in listener land. Hi. Okay, I'm calling. I was a little surprised with Jeremiah yesterday. He's pretty. I'm always on the page with him. We got a lot of agreements, but I totally saw a different thing about the situation with Ukraine. Before I go in, I just want to say, Utrees, your democracy with the radio callers, I don't see that anywhere else. And I say anywhere else. You don't put us on to the end of the show. We're waiting for the whole show, and then get another tape coming on and a commentary, and then whoop, we're not on. So, and then next day it's another issue, and so it gets very confusing and just, I got to say, constipating mentally. So, yeah, I'm glad on that one. So I really appreciate that, and I wish somebody else, you know, because not everybody takes calls on the station, but you know, the ones who do, and I wish they would take a lesson from you in this department with respect for the listeners and the time that we have, because we don't know that we're, I don't know I'm going to be here tomorrow. So, you know, I'm waiting for that hour, which could be valuable for other things, and you're waiting to deal with the topic, and then you're sent off to limbo land. So,
the whole point of community radio is the word community. We build a community. We are a community. And what happens in a community? People exchange ideas. They exchange things. And a radio is a perfect tool for that. We don't have to be on television screens and whatnot, but we can talk to each other and share ideas, which is, in my view, the ultimate modern revolution. We can talk. So what is on your mind today?
Well, I would like to give you a gold star for, again, saying what we know about you and your show and allowing listeners to speak up. You get the gold star, I think, of the station. I have to say that. And so as far as the previous call saying about, you know, keeping up with the marches, I mean, someone said there was only a paltry 25,000 out there in Washington in the cold weather. Well, that's how things start. And at least those people showed up. They didn't hide out in a bunker somewhere in another state. So I say that out there. And as far as that goes, there is another march coming. I saw people up here on Fordham Road in the cold weather for 4 hours handing out these flyers about January 23rd march. I mean, March 23rd march in Washington, say no to the mandate, and you're going to have Dr. McCullough there and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. again. So that's on that for the previous caller, anybody else who's listening who wants to get away from the paralysis of analysis and get out there in the warmer weather, unlike these winter soldiers out there this past weekend. So, on to Ukraine. Jeremiah, I would look into the history of it when the Ukrainian government wanted to do business with Europe as well as Russia, and that was unacceptable to certain powers here. And there was the protest, which was then staged in that against the government. The president of the country voted in legally, democratically, said, go back home, we'll vote again. And they didn't want to hear that, so they threw Molotov cocktails at the governmental buildings. Try that over here and see if you don't get shot. And the president fled for his life back to Russia. And that's a country, by the way, Ukraine, which, by the way, the government sent in place, which was on tape with the ambassador, they put in the very person they said who would be good for that position, who is a pro-fascist, and the people supporting in charge of the army there, they are up against a country that the Germans killed 25 million of their people, flouting Nazi insignias. How would we feel if somebody came to Mexico with a Confederate flag and promoting that kind of mentality to go backwards that way? So I think, you know, do unto others as you want to do to us. So that's something that I think, Jeremiah, I know you're a very well-spoken person. I enjoy listening to you. You've got a good radio voice. But in the Ukraine situation, I think you peel back a few more layers on that. It's not as simple as you made it sound that they, you know. And by the way, Russia has two bases in the world. We have about 1,000. So just on that issue, I just wanted to get that through from yesterday. And even now, they won't allow. And they, by the way, people forget also with Western and Eastern Germany, Russia gave Eastern Germany back to let them reunite. But they said, don't put them into NATO. Go up on our borders with missiles. Well, all these other countries that were around them that would allow the degree of democracy without troops, they are putting missiles in Poland. They're putting missiles they want to put in probably in Ukraine. And, you know, a country that's been invaded so many times, every time they get an act together, it's, you know, they would be pretty apprehensive about what we're trying to do there to put missiles on their border. And I think that's important in this equation. And, again, it does stir up the pots for, like you said yesterday, war is profitable for the corporate heads who make a lot of money in the armaments industry. And that's something to be always looked at, because remember once upon a time we had a peace dividend after that Germany was reunited and the tensions with Russia was simmering down. Well, that peace dividend didn't go anywhere to us. And as far as the Social Security money that was for us, starting with Reagan, with Social Security, if Utrecht puts $100,000 in the bank, and Gino takes out $5,000 every year, you ain't going to have nothing in 20 years. And that's the part they don't say when we're running out of money with Social Security. They keep using it for other things than it was intended for. So it's connected. The money that goes there is taken away from everything else here, as far as you know, smaller schools, living wages, health care. So those are just some issues that are on my mind, Utrecht, today. I couldn't get through yesterday, but again, most especially, I really salute you with your honoring democracy. I know back on BAI with Democracy Now!, you could never make one phone call back to her to give some feedback. So again, gold star for you today, and actually gold star for you for these years, that you allow the public to speak up spontaneously early on in the program, not towards the end. And then you're lucky if one caller gets on out of the so-called 10 million listening. So thank you very much, and God bless you, and I'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you so much for your call today. You're listening to our continuation of yesterday's program, in which we're talking about what concerns you at this time in this country. What is the major concern that you have, and why do you have it? 888-874-4888. The reason we're talking about this is because in times of crisis, or when people are feeling very much on edge about something, it is important that we have avenues for release. People should be able to talk about what is bothering them and why. You would find in many countries where the internal situation is chaotic, you'll find more than likely that the people have no way to express themselves. And people start just assuming things, but you would get a great deal of enlightenment if you just stay put and listen. What is it that people are saying? What is the concern? And is anybody in a position to do something about it listening? That's important. And that's why I think I get a lot of instruction just listening. Just listening to what people are saying. Because they may not be aware of it, but any time we communicate, we don't just communicate on one level, you see. We have many levels at which we're communicating. Sometimes we are not aware of that ourselves. But if you listen and you listen intently, you're getting an education in what it is that concerns people. And over time, that very thing becomes a major factor in what people eventually make up their minds to do about the thing that has been bothering them this long. We have a president who is about to name, after they go through their rituals of interviews and whatnot, a new Supreme Court justice. That's a big deal. It's a big deal in the United States. And for the life of me, I don't understand why. I've never understood this thing. Okay, I understand it's a high position. It is a very cherished position. And people in the field of law, it's a very precious position because it carries with it a great deal of authority. You are, in fact, every time you make a ruling, you are affecting a whole society. So I understand that. But I also think that a job like that should be very quiet. People shouldn't even know you were sitting on the Supreme Court, because your job is in a way to help save a society from itself. This society needs a lot of saving, by the way. We act as if, well, we've got about 95% of it covered. We know what we're doing. We're not like those crazy countries where every second day there is a big protest and a fight. But really, the Supreme Court should be very quiet, should not even be known, in my view. All they should do is show up, read their legal texts, debate strenuously with each other, and come to a conclusion about whatever it is they're deliberating on. But here it takes on the trappings of Hollywood. It's a big deal. And I don't know what it's meant to signify to the public. We certainly have no real appreciation of Stephen Breyer's mind, or any justice's mind for that matter. And we shouldn't. This is their area. And they can handle it themselves, among themselves. But I just detest the movie star syndrome, where everybody is a star, and we lose focus of the fact that, in a way, their main job is to help correct dangerous wrongs that have been committed against people, powerless people, and that's what they're supposed to do. That should be a very quiet job. Nobody should know who you are. You know? But then we have this whole thing, and then there's going to be a retirement party, and the president will be there, and they'll have wonderful hors d'oeuvres and champagne, I guess. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous the way people get into this notion of adulation. We must adore these people. No, we don't. We should not adore them at all. It's like any other job. Theirs is one that focuses on how to legally address the issues that people are facing in this country every day, and how to encompass all of that within what we call the Constitution. Very, very serious issues that require, in my view, the first thing it requires is that nobody knows who you are, or very few people know. And you can write all you want when you retire, but really, we don't need to know. We don't need all of this tra-la-la, because a justice of the Supreme Court is to be treated like a movie star. Sorry, I don't buy that. 888-874-4888. What I'll do at this moment is take a break. We'll take a break and come back right after that to what you have to say right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. Together, we are trying to address a question that really I haven't heard anybody ask the public. What is it that concerns you especially at this moment, and why? We'll start with E from Florida. You're on the air, E.
Hi, Utrecht. I'm just responding to what you just said. We shouldn't be worshiping these judges as movie stars. But why are we worshiping movie stars either? Why are
they
so great?
They're in the entertainment world. Their job is to entertain us.
Right.
A judge's job is not to entertain us, but to administer the law.
Right. But my point is we shouldn't be worshiping anybody except the Lord. That's who we should worship, not actors and artists and musicians and politicians and kings and queens. Yeah. We're back in the royalty days again here. That's what it seems like.
Well, what do you want? Do you want everybody to be serious all the time? There is an area in our lives called entertainment, and it takes the edge off for a lot of people, and that's okay. So
I understand that. I understand that, Beatrice. I said I understand that. They take the edge off of things. But, you know, everybody has some kind of a talent. If I can sew a button on a shirt better than anybody else in the world, that's my talent. It should be just equal with reciting some great poem or something. I just see we make too much of a big deal about certain things and not much of a big deal about other things. You know, maybe we should reconsider things how we make our standards of what's important and what's not important, you know?
Well, I'll tell you, if that is, it would be a very dull and boring society. We need some avenue to ventilate, to give ourselves a permission to just take it easy for a while, to lighten up.
Right, but back in the day, they had groups of people that would go from town to town and entertain people. They weren't like superstars and paid millions of dollars because they can act and they can sing or they could dance. They're just there to make us happy. You know,
they caught hell. They didn't ever make enough money to eat and feed their families. They didn't have a home, most of them. They had to live in a kind of commune situation. It was not an easy life. And they had to sacrifice a lot for their art. So we should just take it easy. You know, people just trying to provide a little levity in life.
If they're gonna worship actors and musicians and comics and all these, then they might as well worship judges too, because it's all the same.
I don't think so. It's not the same.
They're all working hard. A person who gets to the Supreme Court had to work very hard to get that position, don't you think?
I think anybody who achieves anything in life worth achieving works hard at it. But I don't think that we need to be the police of how people, whether they're enjoying their lives the way they want to. They have a right to enjoy life the way they want to. They're not breaking any laws. They're not committing any infractions. They're just doing their thing.
I don't know. I guess I'm not making. So, in other words, we should worship actors and musicians, but not
that's
politicians.
You just took the big leap into what I never ever said or even intimated.
But you said we shouldn't worship judges like actors. That's what you said.
I said we shouldn't worship
statement.
Judges because this is the highest legal authority in the land. It's a very somber function, members of the U.S. Supreme Court. And we should give them that kind of respect. And they themselves should conduct themselves in a way that they get that respect automatically. But we have Hollywoodized the U.S. Supreme Court even, and a lot of these judges justices of the U.S. Supreme Court sometimes have gotten caught up in the whole fantasy of Hollywood. They ought to be known for something. I just want, go do your job, read your books, and deal with the law. I'd be happy if you could do just that.
Well, I agree. But I never see, like, the Supreme Court justices doing anything like fanfare stuff. They seem to stay in their place. And when it comes time for them to make a decision on an important ruling, then they go to work. But I don't hear, you don't hear Ruth Bader Ginsburg that much when she was alive. You didn't hear, considering that she was a judge for so long, you didn't really see her in the public eye like she was rubbing shoulders.
No, they do it in a different way. They do it where you and I and other ordinary people don't have access. But they do it.
Okay, I guess my problem is, Eutrice, is I just think we should just... Sometimes... I mean, does a person who does a podcast deserve to get $100 million for doing that? I mean,
you're making an entirely different argument now. You're making an argument based on a number figure as opposed to the economy of broadcasting, which is a whole different world. You have to appreciate it. What is the economy of media, really? And on what do you place value? How is value determined? You have people who could barely spell, but they're pulling down a couple of million a year. But in any event, we're off topic, and you know I hate that.
But well, I wasn't on the topic. I was responding to what you had just said about the judges not being worshipped like actors. That's my own, that was the only thing I'm responding to. I don't think anybody okay. should be worshipped besides the Lord. That's who I think should be worshipped. Not
okay, so you made your point. Thank you.
Okay.
Neil
right,
from
thanks.
Connecticut, you're on the air.
All right.
What do you think at this time in this nation? Is something that is of grave concern, major concern to you, and why?
I would, rather than answer that, I'd like to direct my response to what you said about the Supreme Court. I totally agree
with
you.
Well, that's not really what we're looking for. That's more like a Friday-type program. Today, I'm interested in your specific point of view about how you are reacting to this time in this nation. What is it that concerns you the most, and why?
Very strong evidence.
You're very low coming in.
Is this any better?
Just speak into the phone.
Okay. I'll take you off speaker. I'm very concerned with what I see as a tendency towards something called mass formation psychosis. And it's a type of mass hypnosis. So right or wrong, the evidence of tribalism is growing. It's exactly what happened to Nazi Germany and East Germany and Russia during the USSR. I see totalitarianism.
Could you give us an example of this mass formation psychosis in the United States that caught your attention and... not in a good way.
The acceptance of the official narrative regarding COVID policies and specifically the mandates. And I do know that a subsidiary of Halliburton, who got all the, Halliburton got all the no-bid contracts in Iraq and Afghanistan, and a subsidiary of that company years ago, I think it was 2006, was granted a something like a $385 million contract to build detention camps. I don't know if it's all over the country. I know the first ones have been installed in the state of Washington. So if that, and if I'm to believe things like Homeland Security purchasing 2.4 billion hollow point bullets, I tie that in to this, what I see as evidence of the mass hypnosis, the mass formation psychosis.
Yes, but it sounds, I hate to tell you, but it sounds like one of those theories. You're talking about things that you have no proof of.
Oh, I can prove that the detention camps have been built. And as far as proving the mass formation psychosis, I think we should look to noted psychiatrists and psychologists. I think that Dr. Peter Bregan, who has a slot on PRN.
Yes, I know him.
On Wednesdays at 4. I consider him quite credible and quite an authority, and he will support what I say about
that. But the issue I'm talking about requires not you referencing somebody else. I'm asking, what do you directly detect for yourself in this society that causes you great concern?
About everyone I know in my demographic, these are mostly people, I'm not in the business class. I'm not even in the working class. I'm below that. But the people that I went to school with and the people around me who are professionals, lawyers, doctors, they've all submitted to, or volunteered to, taking the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. So I feel more and more isolated in my point of view. Science is rising to the occasion, and the truth will out, but at what cost? And at the cost of how many lives and livelihoods? So when I said totalitarian, when I see people who I usually thought had critical thinking skills, they've thrown those in the trash, their critical thinking skills, and have just accepted the official narrative without question. Don't even want to discuss the facts of the matter. So I don't want to get off track. I'd say an example would be all these people I know, except for a few young people who haven't been hypnotized, who haven't been made so comfortable in their professions and their livelihoods by, you know, anyone who feels that the system has been good to them is trusting and they're believing in the wrong agencies. So that's just the only example I can come up with now, is that everyone I know in my demographic is so willing to, or if they've held out for a little while, they've given in to the pressure. Some jumped on that wagon right away. Others held off for a while. But then with the constant fear-mongering, which is part of the official narrative, fear, 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 I believe that when people call it a fear-demic, the COVID business, I believe that a lot of health professionals, can support the idea that fear itself lowers your immunity. And I think a lot of people with background radiation and all other toxicity in the environment and their lifestyles, the way they eat and exercise or not, I think that our immunity as a nation is quite low. Our absorption of refined sugar has brought everybody to the state.
You're way off track.
Well, what I did want to talk about was
the Supreme Court,
because I wanted to respond to that, but you wouldn't let me.
No, the idea is, what do you sense and see and feel in this society now as it is that causes you concern? That's all. It's not an indictment. I'm not looking for you to indict anybody or to postulate new ideas. I'm just saying, from a point of view of reaction, what is it that you could put your finger on as something that causes you to be very concerned, and why?
The impression a lot of us have that we're on the brink of civil war, and I think that's a manufactured impression. Again, we're talking about the fear-mongering. And as Gerald Celente says, when it all goes bad, they take you to war. So it's a distraction from our domestic problems. So I think we're on the brink of at least a proxy war in Ukraine. I don't believe we're on the brink of nuclear war, because that's mutual destruction. I think that my impression is that our current administration, the executive branch, and the top cop, the attorney general, I think all the saber rattling is meant to distract us from domestic problems, from the economy, and the fact that we're on the precipice of a totalitarian government here, as exemplified by the rollout of mandates and the media blackout of what's going on in Europe. They're not letting us know. Where there's a rally of a million over there in France, there's only a rally of 25,000 here. So a lot of us are still in this part of the mass formation psychosis. Part of that is the impression that we can trust our government. And I don't. And I think more and more people are not trusting the government and the official narrative. So, brink of totalitarianism, brink of war. But I think these things are manufactured as, along with the fear-demic of the COVID business.
All right. Thank you very much for your contribution today. Gwen, you're on the air from New York.
Hi, Eutrice. I say ditto to everything that gentleman just said. But something else that's really got my attention was, and Gary talked about this today, but I heard this yesterday, that they're refusing to give a young man a heart transplant because he won't take the vaccine. And immediately, my mind just shot off to like, wow, that sounds like China, I have nothing against China, but I don't particularly like the way they grow organs over there. And I thought it was amazingly unfair, but it also led me over to the medical system. I won't go into that whole system, but I just want to say something about it, that my mother is, my mother was mistakenly put into hospice a week ago. And, she could have died had I not personally gone down to make sure she got to the hospital. And it was a good thing that the hospital did not know she was mistakenly put in hospice. Now, this happened because of a misdiagnosis. And everyone was standing around like vultures trying to get their checks. And I'm really concerned that our hospital system has degraded so much, and the bias from COVID to create a situation where a person who is at death's door has waited for a long time for an organ cannot get that organ because he won't take a shot. And the interesting thing is that they say that they suppress your immune system anyway when you go to have an organ transplant. So you shouldn't be all hopped up on something that's helping, you know, stimulate your immune system. But what's scary to me is that, okay, this is the first guy you're saying no to. How many other people are you going to say no to? And who gets to pick? I mean, like, seems like an awfully godlike situation. Like, you get to pick whether this guy is going to die, actually. Because this man wouldn't be, he's a young man, wouldn't be there to get a heart transplant if he wasn't at death's door. And I think it's really...
Have you figured out why this policy was in place?
The only thing that I can figure out is it's another wedge in the mandate policy for this vaccine. So it's another reason to frighten people who will not take the vaccine into taking the vaccine, and it is scary. I mean,
it's yet another way of a system protecting itself.
Well,
if in fact things were basically left alone to proceed in the way you talk, and there was and death occurred, the first thing that the hospital is thinking of is how does it protect itself from lawsuits?
Right.
And one of the ways is to say, this must be done, that must be done, this protocol must be followed, that protocol must be followed. They don't care whether you agree or not. They just care that you fulfill these requirements in order to give them some measure of protection. That they saw to it, they had the forms, they show that they talked and counseled both the patient and the family of the patient, and they would have been happy to proceed from there, but they can't without some kind of concession that allows them to not assume blame if things should go wrong.
Well, I completely understand that. However, I'm sure that the hospital up to this point has most likely performed organ transplants without people having gotten a COVID vaccine. So this is brand new. This is something we haven't seen before, and it's a new policy. Now, my father did not have an organ transplant, but he had a valve put in his heart. And I don't remember any kind of huge restrictions. I mean, there are very stark realities and things you have to sign on to, because there is a very high risk, especially in my father's case, he was 85, that he could die during the surgery. We all knew it. We all had to sign off on it. We had to look those papers. And I think that a way of mitigating this circumstance would be simply to say to the patient, look, you need to sign this form that if anything happens during the operation or that you get COVID, that we're not responsible. And that happens all the time. There are always forms that you can sign off on. And I'm sure because the man had such a strong, obviously he has a very strong fear of taking the vaccine, or he would have taken it. And I'm sure that, you know, he would have signed anything if offered to him as an option of saying that, you know, I am willingly not taking this vaccine. And if anything happens with COVID, I take responsibility for it. That's another way of doing it. And it could have been done. And I just think that I don't think it's going to be just one case. I think it's another tool in the toolbox to coerce people to take a vaccine that they don't feel comfortable taking. And you know, there have been so many excellent shows now. I listened to a young lady on Gary Knowles' show yesterday who was an RN nurse, and she was very a skilled speaker and very, very intelligent, talking about what she was seeing in the hospitals. And interestingly to me, what was going on was I was hearing her talk about the COVID, her COVID experience, but I was also relating it back to my poor mother's recent experience and how badly she was handled and mismanaged and misdiagnosed. I mean, they had her at death's door. They had her going to hospice, and you know what she had? She had a blockage. Now, yes, the blockage was very bad, and it almost exploded, and it could have killed her. That's true. but that's not AFib, and that doesn't have anything to do with your heart. And that's how they determined, without, by the way, seeing. They didn't go to see my mom. They didn't come in person to examine her. Somebody got on the phone and just said, okay, I'm going to make a prescription for hospice after one Zoom telephone call. This is really scary to me that the medical, well, I guess I'm going through all these things with the medical system right now. It's discovering things as I go along. And I just related that my mom's story back to the COVID. And then when I heard yesterday about this young man and his heart, the heart transplant, you know, if this is going to be the policy, then I think we definitely have to have a way of mitigating it. If a person wants to have a transplant and they're willing to take the risk of knowing, you know, you always take a risk that you're going to die anyway in a transplant, and you sign off to everything, that you could die right there on the table. It's a very dangerous operation. So, you know,
you need to appreciate the other side of the coin, which is it's not just a heart transplant. It's a huge investment.
Yes.
Big money involved.
Yep.
And if the young man dies, whoever makes the investment is going to lose. They're not going to just be, you know, sympathetic and say, oh, I'm sorry, it didn't work. They will be mad as hell. They want the money guaranteed.
Well, you know, and all I can say is every
time you... This is a dilemma in the medical field.
Yeah, it is.
You have to pretty much guarantee that the person will pull through before steps are taken to save his or her life, which is bizarre, but that's the way it is.
Well, you know, I have to say that I do appreciate it, and I understand what you're saying. It's a huge amount of money, and, you know, even in our situation, the idea of giving my father, an 85-year-old man, a new valve, there was a lot of swirling around whether or not they should do that operation. He's 85. But you know what? He lived. And guess how old he is now? He's 99. I'm very happy he had the operation. And my mom's a killer 95, man. And the one thing that gets my mom really racing is her hatred for Trump. All she has to do is see him. The AFib goes away right away, and she's breathing just fine because she can't stand him. And they're married for 76 years. Well, I just wanted to put that my concern about that transplant. I got scared yesterday. You said what's concerning you, so I told you.
Yes, I mean, but what you said has enormous implications.
Yeah,
there are lots and lots of people who are not benefiting from medical care and treatment because the money factor comes first.
Exactly. They're choosing to use Remdesivir, which is so expensive. It's $3,000 for one course of it. Where they won't use hydroxychloroquine, which I think is like $2 for a treatment. And it's the money that's involved in this. It's enormous amounts of money. And I think that you can talk about the heart transplant and how if anything happens, there's a lot of money wasted. But before we do that, please, let's look at what's happened with COVID and the money train and how it rolls along. And let's look at the people that are making the money there, because that is the mega money. That's off the chart money. And so we should really address that too. I mean, interestingly enough, yesterday, I think this woman was saying that I heard on one of the shows that I think only 25% of the people that get Remdesivir actually survive. It's such a toxic drug. Wow, it's amazing. But it's $3,000 a dose. And guess what? The hospitals get, if you use that course of treatment, you get a 20% bonus at the end, if whether the patient lives or dies. 20% bonus just for using that. I mean, it's amazing. And I got to say, too, that I talked to a friend of mine who works at a hospital yesterday.
We have to go. I'm out of time.
Thank you.
Out of time, but you can always call back and finish up your.
You know I will. And you know I will.
Yes, I know. Thank you all for calling in and participating today. Tomorrow is Free Your Mind Friday, so another shot at expressing your views, completely free, no charge. Bye bye.